Ladies and gentlemen, live from the West Coast, it's time for Ring Talk Live Worldwide. Your inside look into combat sports. And now, the host of the longest-running fight show in radio and internet history.
But he has a shock in store for him. He has two great chances, Slim and none, and Slim's out of town.
Pedro Fernandez.
I wanted to do the right thing.
Damas y caballeros, bienvenidos, ladies and gentlemen. Emanating, coming at you from the multi-million dollar Sport Byline Studios in San Francisco, California. Check it. This is Ring Talk. Often imitated but never duplicated, 37 plus years now of knocking out all bums. Welcome to Ring Talk Live Worldwide. My name is Pedro Fernandez, obviously the modest one this morning. Of course, we have 2 hours of combat sports coming to you live on Sports Byline, iHeartRadio, Sirius XM Satellite Radio, Channel 211, and like 1,000 other internet platforms. Straight up, we're talking combat sports and mixed martial arts for the next couple of hours. Of course, Larry Murchie will be here in a little while, the retired HBO icon. We'll hear from Mike Tyson and Roy Jones. Everybody's talking about that. I watched it afterwards. I wasn't all that excited. I mean, it went the way two old guys were supposed to go. I'm talking about carrying each other 8 rounds. It went good. It was good for the sport. It was good for both their personalities. Bottom line is they made a lot of money, and one guy from the NBA got knocked out afterwards. We'll talk about that in depth after the break. Straight up, you are tuned to Ring Talk Live Worldwide, open phone lines all around the planet, if you dare. 1-800-878-7529. That's toll free. 1-800-878-7529. You can also text us here in the studio, the guilt-free text line, the number 1-415-275-1613. That's 1-415-275-1613. There was some real boxing going on across the pond. Of course, two heavyweights engaged, undefeated Joe Joyce, who I've been dogging so bad, saying I could beat him and all this kind of good stuff, right? I watched him fight Danny Dubois yesterday, and guess what? A different guy showed up. I couldn't beat that guy. Straight up, Joe Joyce deserves props, stopping Danny Dubois in the 10th round with a broken orbital bone. You are tuned to Ring Talk Live Worldwide, often imitated, but never duplicated. Stay tuned and find out why. Now, more of Ring Talk with Pedro Fernandez.
I'm just ready to get it on and crush this guy's skull.
Check it. You are tuned to Ring Talk Live Worldwide, 12 minutes past the hour number one. Of course, this is the Sunday edition, 2 hours of Ring Talk Live Worldwide. Joe Joyce now 12-0, 11 KOs, a TKO and 10 over the second-ranked heavyweight. I'm talking about Danny Dubois, who I picked overwhelmingly to win, so I was wrong like 100 different ways. Bottom line is Dubois with a broken orbital bone. How do I know about that? I broke a few of my time. 15-1 now, 14 KOs. His stoppage was 36 seconds of round number 10. Of course, the Mike Tyson, Roy Jones exhibition we'll get to in just a second. Some of the guests we'll roll with today, of course. I'm bringing you Kenny Rainford now, hour number two. Kenny is part of the Tyson Fury training camp. Of course, Tyson Fury, the world linear heavyweight champion. Kenny's always a blast to have on the radio, no doubt about that. He's never really retired. He's a trainer now, but the bottom line is Kenny's always a ball to have. We'll have Kenny on in hour number two, as we will have the hardest puncher in heavyweight history. That's right. Ernie Shavers checks in at 40 minutes past the hour, hour number two. That's right. Hour number two of Ring Talk Live Worldwide, Kenny Rainford and the great Ernie Shavers. Ernie is the hardest puncher of all times. Larry Holmes told me, and this is sort of the way it was with me in boxing, if you can see a punch coming, no matter how hard it is, you can take it. I don't know what this is. There's something about you that just tells you you can take that punch, okay? But the punches you don't see, they knock you down or knock you out, okay? Ernie Shavers could hit you with punches you could see, Larry Holmes told me, and still knock you down. He didn't believe it. He got hit by a lot of guys, but never got hit by a guy like Ernie Shavers. Ernie in hour number two of Ring Talk Live Worldwide. Of course, Mike Tyson and Roy Jones engaging in an 8-round, 2-minute exhibition. Thank you by the WBC, something for some frontier title or something like that. More power to him. It was a good night for the sport because a lot of squares got to turn in and watch Mike Tyson, a guy that they had only heard about, you know, dreamed about, and maybe we could see Mike Tyson fight one time. Yeah, well, it wasn't exactly a Mike Tyson fight. It was like a 52-year-old Mike Tyson who was fat and out of shape to an extent. I mean, he was in good shape for being 52, but let's be honest. Mike Tyson lost his last two professional fights. He lost to Kevin McBride, who I could have beat. Kevin was a stiff. If ever, oh God, I don't want to keep going there. But the bottom line is Kevin had no skills, none whatsoever. And Tyson lost to him in Washington, D.C. I was like blown away. I remember we had the press conference at Howard University, and I was just blown away that this guy would even have a chance with Mike Tyson. He stopped Mike Tyson. And before that, Mike Tyson lost to a guy by the name of Danny Williams. And no, you won't find Danny Williams in any Hall of Fames either. Bottom line is, Tyson was on a dive. His career was going nowhere. He's come back after, you know, several years, 12, 15 years now, come back, put together an exhibition. The people seem to be somewhat happy paying $49.95 because, you know, there's a sucker born every minute. I mean, that's what P.T. Barnum said, no doubt about it. There's a sucker born every minute. And I got to tell you like this, if you paid $49.95 for this, Cuddy, they were suckers.
You think you won the fight?
Yeah, but I'm good with a draw.
Why?
Because I entertained the crowd. The crowd was happy with it.
We'll be back to you in a second. You happy with this draw?
Hell no. I ain't never said if I would draw. I wear draws. I don't do draws. I like it. But the dude is so strong, man. And I understand why they say some things are bucket list. Because when he hits you, if it's his head, his punches, his body shots, don't matter. Everything hurts. So for me, I thought I did enough boxing on the outside to edge it out. But, you know, I'm cool with a draw. I mean, we just might have tried to do it again. Well, I don't know.
You looked exhausted for a little while. Did the body shots take a toll?
The body shots definitely took a toll. The body shots are what make you exhausted. Any good fighter knows that. And I knew it, too. I thought I had a six-pack that was all right, but I guess I'm going to give me a 12-pack because the six ain't getting it.
It came back like nothing. You took it. You took it. I knew I hit you with a good shot. You took it. You took it.
But I'm a game moving.
I respect that.
Mike, at age 54, you haven't been in the ring for 15 years. How would you assess your performance, your stamina, and overall how you perform?
Well, I'm used to doing it for 3 minutes. And sometimes that 2 minutes felt like 3 minutes. I'm just happy I got this under my belt and I'm continuing to go further and do more.
You'll do this again?
Absolutely. He's going to be on the card as well.
Well, let me ask you about your performance. What was it like for you to be in the ring as compared to what it was when you left as a professional?
I was very happy to be here, and
despite performance-wise,
yeah, despite what anybody said, I was so happy to go to 8 rounds. But everybody knows I can knock somebody out. But everybody don't know I can go to 8 rounds and 10 rounds, and that's what I'm more grateful for now than anything. And no knockers. Knockers don't mean nothing. You got to be able to go the distance. That's fighting.
Everybody has a plan until they get hit. Yeah. You got hit. And how did it affect you?
I went to plan B. I hit him back.
Roy, you want to continue this now at age 51, or did you get dissatisfied at this point?
Man, it's hard to say. My Pensacola fans love me.
We got to do this again.
Everybody loves Mike. I love Mike, too. But, you know, it's something to take them punches in there from Mike. So, you know, I go talk to my family, see how they feel about it. If they thought they enjoyed what they saw, then if we want to do it again, we'll come back and do it again. But, you know, me, like I said, Pensacola in the house. I want to thank everybody helping me out. Big Al, Tom, Wap, Russ, everybody on my team, Jim Foster. I mean, so many people, everybody in Pensacola in the house still. Thank y'all for tuning in. Thank the whole world for tuning in, especially my Russian citizens, my Russian people. I want to say thanks to everybody who gave us the homage, sent us out the right way. And if everything goes well, like I said, and the family's cool with it, then...
A lot of people were afraid, Roy, you might get hurt tonight. Were you really afraid in the back of your head that something could happen that might have put you in peril?
I was afraid I might get hurt. I didn't fight in 20 years. He only stopped fighting for 3 years. I'm afraid I might get hurt. Why nobody care about my ass?
Well, that's typical, right?
He didn't fight in 15 years. He stopped fighting 3 years ago, and everybody worrying about his ass.
No, nobody thinks that a giant is going to fall.
I haven't did this in 15, 16 years. I'm not a giant. I'm a beginner.
Did he ever hurt you tonight?
Well, listen, he surprised me with the hook. He hit me with a hook, a good hook.
Hurt.
Yes, it did hurt.
And back to the question.
Yeah.
Were you afraid of being in peril?
Man, once I go in there, it's all balls to the wall, bro. I mean, I feel the shots, and I know they're going to hurt, and I know he could take me out if it's possible if he came with the wrong one. But for me, man, I'm game. I go to the end. When I put these on, it's a wrap. Take me on the stretcher. You know?
Final thought. Would you do this in a non-exhibition circumstance if you could get a license?
No, I'm just going to do this. This is bigger than fighting for, you know, winning the championship. We're humanitarians. We're helping people. That's bigger. I'm into that now. And I'd like to thank Magic Mike, Jet, Ron, all my sparring partners for kicking my ass to get me in shape. I love you guys. Can't wait to get back in the gym with you.
Mike, thank you. Enjoyed it.
Thank you very much.
All
thank
right.
you,
bro. Roy, congratulations.
Yeah, I want to thank all my sparring partners as well, everybody that contributed. My contribution to Kobe Bryant.
In his building.
Yes, sir. So I had to give a tribute to Kobe because he was my latest greatest. Michael Jordan always be my number one favorite, but Kobe and Iverson right there next, second and third. So, and LeBron, too. Everybody's good. So I just enjoy sports, man. I just thank God I was able to come out here and do what I did. And like I said, once again, Pensacola in the house. If Pensacola tells me to go back in there again, guess what? I'm back in there again.
Thank you, Roy. Appreciate it. All right, and thanks to the Staples Center.
Roy Jones Jr., Mike Tyson talking it up last night, of course, in empty Staples Center because of COVID. But the bottom line is they made some money, no doubt about that. Oh, on the undercard, a guy by the name of Jake Paul, some type of YouTube personality, 2-0, two knockouts, scored an ugly second-round knockout over three-time NBA slam dunk champion Nate Robinson. Nate, you shouldn't have messed around. This sort of reminds me of Cuddy. This reminds me of Marvin Gaye. Marvin Gaye was in Detroit fooling around the Kronk guys, okay, back in the 60s, all right, before the Kronk gym was happening. Emmanuel had a gym going out there, and Marvin Gaye stepped in, and Marvin had been smoking weed, and Marvin had been telling people he was going to be heavyweight champion of the world. He only weighed 175 pounds. The first time Marvin sparred, he got hit on that chin. Bang! It was all over for Marvin Gaye. But the bottom line is, Nate Robinson was an ugly knockout victim last night. Badu Jack was a winner in a fight that probably shouldn't have ever taken place. I mean, Blake McKernan from Northern California, I believe Sacramento, California, 13-1 now, 6 KOs, came in undefeated for 8 rounds. That's 24 minutes. Took a horrific beating and a horrible mismatch, and the California State Athletic Commission should be arrested for putting this fight on. The scores were 80-72 across the board, 3 times, and at the end of the day, it was not good for boxing. Unbeaten lightweight Jermaine Ortiz, now 14-0, 8 KOs, a 7-round TKO win over Solomon Sagayo, who came in 13-2, pretty good record there, 4 KOs, but not a big puncher. Body shop drops the guy in round number 7. And, of course, he's got to stop with a follow-up barrage. Bottom line is, at the end of the day, not a whole lot of great fights last night. But to some people, it was a bit of nostalgia. They got to go back at times and maybe visit the spirit of Mike Tyson and the spirit of Roy Jones, because I got news for you. Both those guys are absolutely shot, and I never want to see them in a boxing ring again. I mean, Mike Tyson saying he's doing this for humanity? Come on, man. He's doing it for his pocketbook and his ego. He's not doing it for anything else. You are tuned to Ring Talk, live worldwide. Check it. You're inside looking to the world of boxing and MMA. Coming to you from the Sports Byline Broadcast Network. Coming to you live on the Sports Byline Broadcast Network, iHeartRadio, SiriusXM, Satellite Radio, Channel 211, and like 1,000 other internet platforms. Of course, a podcast comes to you at Apple, iTunes, Google. Our favorite podcast, the Ring Talk podcast, of course, comes to you at anchor.fm. Check them out. They got all the latest shows, including yesterday's show with Boxing's PhD, Socrates Palmer. You are tuned to Ring Talk Live Worldwide. Tower power to the break.
The police, they really care about you. It's kind of rough, but that's all right with me. Because I dig the vibe, and I like the company.
Now, more of Ring Talk with Pedro Fernandez.
More Mighty Tower of Power. Check them out. They've got 2 new albums. In the last 2 years, they've got 2 new albums. Cuddy calls them drops, but they're 2 new albums. Check them out, towerofpower.com. Of course, Emilio and the gang rocking and rolling. Going to switch gears here. The Godfather, we can't get a hold of him, so we will go to Larry a little bit later. But the bottom line is, you know, yesterday I wanted to do this editorial, and then I held back on it, and I said to myself I was going to save it for hour number 2 today. But since we're in hour number 1, ready to rock, we've got an open hole here. We're talking about Tommy the Duke Morrison. check this out. When he was an amateur fighter, of course, I'm talking about the guy that starred in Rocky V. He played Tommy Gunn along with Sylvester Stallone, of course, The Rock. Anyway, 222-20 as an amateur. An amazing record as an amateur, no doubt about that. When I first heard of him, he was Tommy Morrison. Of course, this guy, an amateur stud from Oklahoma, I mean, he was knocking out everybody. And then, of course, he made it to the Olympic trials, I think, in 1988 and lost to Ray Mercer, the Mitchell gold medalist. Of course, a name that we'll come back to a little bit later. But with a record of 222-20, wow, Tommy Morrison, a relative of Hollywood cowboy John Wayne, I mean, he was an amazing guy. I mean, physically, he looked good. He had that Hollywood look to him. Had the Oklahoma sound, but he had that Hollywood look to him. And, of course, he was a stud. I mean, he was a very active heterosexual. Let's put it to you like that. Anyway, bottom line is, he rolls through about 28 guys as a pro. And then, of course, he comes into contact, of course, one more time with the aforementioned Ray Mercer. This is in Atlantic City in 1991. I was sitting about the sixth or seventh row from the ring, and I saw like a horrific beating going on. So I jump up and I run across the ring, and I'll run up to the ring, and I'm screaming at the top of my lungs at Larry Hazard. Larry Hazard is the head of the New Jersey State Athletic Commission. And the reason why I'm doing this is that recently I had watched Rico Velasquez die in a San Jose ring. And then you can sense, certain people can sense when the Grim Reaper is in the room. When I mean the Grim Reaper, I'm talking about Dr. Death. I thought Dr. Death was there with Art Serrano and Roy Jones, the aforementioned Roy Jones, when they fought in Reno, Nevada in 1992. Of course, that was close, but this night, I was positive that you know, the Grim Reaper was going to show up if somebody didn't stop this fight. I mean, Tony Perez, the referee, the Puerto Rican referee from New York City, of course, he was famous for not stopping the Ali Frazier fight in the second round. I'm talking about the second Ali Frazier fight when Joe was like on Queer Street, and then he stopped the fight, said he heard the bell. The bell didn't ring, saved Joe Frazier from a knockout. Anyway, this night, Tony Perez is like, he's reading a newspaper. I mean, Tommy Morrison is getting hit with shots you would not believe. I mean, yikes. They were crazy. So I run up in the ring. I'm screaming. I'm jumping up and down. I get Larry's attention. Larry finally stops the fight. Larry jumps off of the apron. Larry Hazard, the athletic commissioner, stops the fight. Boom. So, you know, fast forward 3 or 4 years, Tommy Morrison goes through some ups and some downs. And then we're in 1995. We're in Kansas City, Missouri, and I'm doing the television for Tommy Morrison's fight against Razor Ruddock. Oh, he went in the fifth round. I think it was the fifth round. Anyway, bottom line is, went in a knockout with the referee Ron Lipton, probably giving Tommy Morrison a bit of a break there. But the bottom line is, Razor Ruddock and Tommy Morrison went back and forth. Tommy would eventually win. We would go to the back to our hotel. I think we're saying like the Radisson, one of those chain hotels, something like that. So we go back to our hotel, and I go up to Tommy's room or to a suite up in the penthouse area. And Tommy's laying on a bed, and this doctor's stitching up his eyes with gloves on. Because, you know, Tommy Morrison, some people thought he had HIV and AIDS at that point in time. Anyway, the bottom line is, I don't know whether he did or not, but I'm watching him. For the last time I ever came in contact with him, he's getting his eyes stitched up, and there's blood all over the place, okay? A little eerie, especially when you think about it later, because he did come, of course, in contact with HIV and or AIDS. We'll get to that in just a second. So anyway, fast forward a couple more years, and Tommy Morrison is out of boxing. He goes into Las Vegas to fight, I think, a guy named Art Weathers or something like that. They test him for the HIV, and he comes back positive for the HIV test, and he can't box anymore. So he says bad behavior and, you know, things like that led to this HIV positive ruling and this. Anyway, you know, he was really apologetic in this kind of good stuff, and I guess he had to be. So anyway, humble as he was, or humble as he seemed, he went away. Then he came back a couple years later and wanted to have a fight. He had a fight over in, I guess, Marcus Rohde, I think, over in Japan or China, Japan, in Asia. And, of course, he ended up winning that fight. Then he had another fight against some schmo. And then he had another fight in Mexico. His last fight was in Mexico. I didn't even know that take place. That took place like 2007, 2008, and he beat some guy in a fourth-round knockout, something like that. So anyway, all the while, Tommy Morrison is testing negative for the HIV virus. So he's saying to everybody, look, I'm cured. I never had HIV to begin with. No, no, no. What he was doing, in my opinion, in the opinion of viral doctors, is he was taking these antiviral drugs, AZT or something like that, or relative of AZT, and he was bringing his AIDS or his HIV level down to undetectable amounts during blood tests. He still had it. He just couldn't detect it because of the drugs he was taking. Okay? So he decided he had cured himself. he was cured. He got married to a new lady. I think her name was Marsha or something. He got married to a new lady, and he had cured himself. I mean, Tommy was cured. He didn't need any of the HIV medicine anymore. No way, no how. So he gets off the medicine. I guess he gets on some type of herbs and this and that. Before you know it, he begins to decline. I mean, really decline. And then his mother, just before he dies, his mother comes out and says he has full-blown AIDS. And, you know, he's about to die. Tommy Moore is about to die. So his wife, I think it was his second wife, Trish, is saying, no, he doesn't have HIV. There's no merit to that. Bottom line is she put up some videos in the past few weeks on the Internet, in which Tony Holden played a part in that. Of course, Tony Holden, my former employer, a promoter, of course, in Tulsa, Oklahoma, the Let's Get It On boxing series with myself and Mills Lane. Of course, before Mills had that stroke and stroked out on us, of course, we had the CBS television contract, but Mills stroked out. So Tony Holden does this video, and he talks about Tommy Morrison not having AIDS. I don't know what the controversy is of Tommy Morrison having HIV back in 1992 or 1993 or something like that. I don't know what the controversy was. They're trying to say that some people said he had it for 4 or 5 years. Tony Holden saying he didn't. I don't know what that means. What does it matter? You know what I'm saying? He ended up dying from it eventually, or they're not saying. So the family's saying he isn't. Mother said he did. Trish says he isn't. But at the end of the day, you know, I guess everybody's got their way to go. If they want to go, I mean, that's their call. But when they pulled this stagecraft, and in my opinion, it was stone cold stagecraft. And what I mean by stagecraft is when you have stagecraft is like when they fix a movie, like, you watch like The Exorcist, like when something jumps out of somebody's stomach or something like that, like some horror movie and bam, a baby jumps out. I mean, you sort of know that it's stagecraft, okay? You just know it's stagecraft because it's a movie. It's not real. So they had this Tommy Morrison video up there where they showed an alleged wound of his, and they said there was something in the wound, and his wife is going, look, she's speaking over the video, and she's going, look, there's something in the wound there, and she starts pulling. They end up putting a pair of tweezers, and they pull out 12 yards of gauze, okay? That's 36 feet of gauze. They're trying to say, I'm kidding you. They pulled out 36 feet of gauze. So they're trying to tell us that it was septic poisoning, that Tommy Morrison died of septic poisoning because of the fact that somebody left 36 feet of gauze. A foot is 12 inches. Think about that. All right. A foot is 12 inches. 36 feet of gauze was left in his body. So they pull this 36 inches out, and it's really creepy. I got this video that they sent me. It's really, really creepy. They're pulling it out. And at the end of the thing, all I could think was stone cold stagecraft. I mean, absolute stagecraft, meaning it was a prop. It was set up. And I have no idea or what motivates somebody to want to do something like that. I mean, Tommy had his ups. He had his downs. He was Tommy Morrison. He was Tommy the Duke Morrison. He was a Tommy Gunn, the movie star. I mean, you know, he was getting a whole lot of leg action down there in L.A. for a while, and he was playing around with Stallone and those guys, okay? And, of course, the AIDS, it probably got that from shooting steroids. I mean, he admitted to me at one point in time, I said, you ever take steroids? He goes, I'm not going to say I didn't. Whoa, just put it to me. I'm not going to say I didn't. So evidently at one point in time, he took some Flintstone vitamins, okay? So Tommy took the Flintstone vitamins, built his body up, and then broke his body down eventually by getting HIV. And, of course, I thought it was from shooting steroids, but it could have came from promiscuous sex. I'm no judge on that. At the end of the day, though, imagine this, pulling 12 yards of gauze out of somebody's body piece by piece. And I'll put this up on my YouTube, on the Ring Talk or the Pedro Fernandez Facebook page, the actual video, because it was a bit of a mind blower. And so, I'm probably not believing me right now that somebody pulled 36 feet of gauze out of somebody's body. They're trying to say that they left that in his body, and that's what killed him. Talk about horse spit with an H. That's what it is. You are tuned to Ring Talk Live Worldwide. Check it. Your inside look into the world of boxing and MMA. Kenny Rainford, of course, coming up in hour number two. Mr. UK in the training camp of World Heavyweight Champion Tyson Fury. We'll hear from Ernie Shavers in hour number two. Ali will be here as well. Of course, the greatest Muhammad Ali in 1968 goes back in time. Of course, Howard Cosell and he go back and forth for a few minutes. They loved each other, no doubt about it. The greatest TV twosome ever in the world of sports, Cosell and Ali, a little bit later on Ring Talk Live Worldwide. Check it. This is your inside look into the world of boxing and mixed martial arts.
You told me you were leaving. You gave your folks the blame and made me cry again.
Well, I'm on Ring Talk, and as you know, this is one of the first shows that got onto the internet. My friend Pedro is a true fighter in his own mind, I should say. But he really is. I seen him exercising the other day, getting ready for somebody. I don't know who it is, because everybody is taking shots at him. So I see him getting himself in good condition so that he can fire back. Never been one to say die. Never been one to hide out. He comes on damn near torpedoes, full steam ahead.
Now more of Ring Talk with Pedro Fernandez.
Good old DK, Don King, not answering the phone of late. I hope his health is okay. But the godfather of referees not answering the phone. I've called him like 3 times in the last, say, month to 4 or 5 weeks, and he hasn't picked up. So straight up, I hope he's feeling better, because he wasn't feeling all that. Actually, last time I talked to him, he was feeling great. The time before that, he wasn't feeling all that good. And he told me he was, this is what he said, quote, this was a little eerie from coming from Don King. Son, he's never called me son. Son, I'm playing a good game with a short stick. And I sort of saw that, I sort of took that as some type of admission of death or something like that. Anyway, bottom line is Don King rock and rolling, still like almost 90 years old. Him and Bob Arum, man. If those two guys could get together, they could really put on some super events. Of course, Don's got to get a few fighters, but I mean, Arum's still rock and rolling, 88, 89 years old. Mr. Bob Arum, Mr. Girl Scout Cookies himself. Canelo Promotions, of course, and Matchroom Boxing. Matchroom Boxing being, of course, Barry Hearn, and Canelo Promotions being basically Canelo's trainer, his manager. His trainer is his manager's son, I've been told. Anyway, the bottom line is Canelo Promotions, you know, the man, pound for pound, the king right now, the guy from Mexico, once beaten fighter, lost that fight to Floyd Mayweather several years ago when he had two left feet, didn't know how to move his feet around, was basically a green fighter. That's why Mayweather fought him then and there, because the bottom line is he had a good chance of beating him. Maybe now, not so much. Anyway, he's going to fight Callum Smith at the Alamo Dome in San Antonio, Texas. Of course, Saturday, December the 19th, it's going to be live on DAZN. Back on DAZN? What's the other way? Back on DAZN? Didn't Canelo just leave DAZN? Didn't he have some like $400 million contract? He just left DAZN. Now he'll be back on DAZN, live on DAZN in 200 plus countries and territories worldwide on TV Azteca in Mexico. Well, you know, bottom line is they're going to put some tickets on sale for this fight. I guess I hope they have some social distancing involved. But the bottom line is the man, Canelo Alvarez, pound for pound king of boxing. Of course, the pay-per-view guy, the guy that turns the cranks. He turns the cranks, baby. He does. Of course, lost that one fight to Mayweather. But everybody else he's beaten. I mean, he beat Sergey Koloff for the light heavyweight title. He's not a light heavyweight. So he moved up in weight. He did something that Marvin Hagler wouldn't do, and that's my knock against Marvin. Marvin never wanted to move up in weight and really challenge anybody. You know, you sort of challenge people when you move up in weight. Believe me, I moved up in weight, and I could beat good welterweights, but I couldn't beat real good welterweights. As far as great welterweights concerned, that wasn't happening. You're uncomfortable? They were just way too big. I remember one time thinking I could beat Mark Breland size. I said, if I get to Mark Breland, I can get under his arms and hit his body and this and that. Then I stood next to Mark Breland and realized, yikes, the guy's like an octopus, 6'2", and his jab hits hard. Anyway, Canelo now, 53, that one loss to Mayweather, 2 draws and 36 KOs, of course. He hasn't fought in the Alamo Dome, I think, since 2013. Of course, he fought the former champion, Austin Trout. Austin Trout, of course, still in that lawsuit with the WBO. I don't know what's going on with that, but the bottom line is maybe he'll have some headlines on that in the upcoming future. But Smith. Now, 27 is it, 19 kills, a tough guy from the UK, no doubt about that. I mean, you know, he comes to fight and he will bring it and he'll have the entire UK up at 2 o'clock in the morning, whatever that's going to go down in England. The kid from Liverpool, of course, the town that brought us the Beatles, so they'll be rocking and rolling, but he ain't going to win. Sorry, but he's just not going to win. I mean, he's just not. I mean, I give him a lot of props, he's done well in his boxing career, but he's not going to beat this guy, just not. Julio Cesar Chavez Jr., remember him? The suicide blonde? What do you mean suicide blonde, Pedro? In other words, his hair was dyed by his own hands, a.k.a. suicide blonde. Anyway, Chavez Jr. came back and fought some guys the other night that didn't have that much ability. And, of course, they wanted to do this on purpose. They did this down there in Sinaloa, Mexico. Of course, Chavez, with that blonde hair, as I said, looking like a... I'm not going to say it. Anyway, former WBC middleweight champion Julio Cesar Chavez, now 56-5, one draw and 34 KOs, crushed or crashed or destroyed Jason Murda. Of course, 14-3-1, 8 KOs in 4 rounds was Friday night in Sinaloa, Mexico. On the undercard, Jorge Arce, one of Jorge Arce's kids, unbeaten bantamweight Kareem Arce, 18-0, 2 draws and 8 KOs. You know, when you see these guys that are the sons of world champions and they got draws, you got to really get suspicious about that, because that means, you know, they probably lost that fight and they gave them a draw. Anyway, that's the way it goes. Kareem Arce, 18-0, 2 draws and 8 KOs. Not a big puncher. A 10-round unanimous winner over, guess who? Jesus Carlton. Carlton came in at 9-7, left at 9-8. I mean, that's not a fight. 9-8, 2 KOs. I mean, the guy's got 18 fights and they're putting him in the ring like that. That's what's wrong with boxing. Speaking of what's wrong with boxing, wow, Gabriel Rosado, you would think that he would have came to fight, man. Him and Danny Jacobs, I mean, they're in a crossroads match Friday night. Of course, they were rocking and rolling, but they didn't rock and roll. There weren't too many clean punches, per se. And the judges, well, they were sort of like bored at the end as well, like I was to an extent. Score was 115, 113, two different ways. What I mean was 115, 113 twice for Jacobs. Of course, the favorite going into the fight, a 3.5, 4-1 favorite. Better than that, somebody said it was 7-1 in some places. Anyway, 115, 113. They had it for Rosado, 115-113 twice for Jacobs, of course. And it was a clash of the IBF regional title, 2016 Olympic gold medalist. Of course, I think he's coming to us from Brazil. Danyar, oh, man, I'm having a good one. Ulasolov, now 10-0, 6 KOs, knocked out a hobo by the name. Oh, I take that back. He's not a hobo. Former, you know, Julius Ndongo, I remember seeing him in the gym in L.A. a couple different times and saying to myself, this guy really got some ability, but just didn't have that step up to the next level, even though he was a former unified champion, 140 pounds, but he wasn't a good fighter, not a great fighter. Anyway, now 23-3, 12 KOs. Of course, the time was 124. At the end of the day, good card of boxing, no doubt about that. Of course, and Chavez Jr., what can I say? You know, they're going to try to run him back again, and he's an overachiever if there ever was one. I mean, I met the kid in San Jose, California. He didn't shave yet. I mean, he had a couple of hairs coming off his lip and this and that, and you know, and he wanted to be a superstar. I mean, I don't mean a superstar in boxing, a superstar in the world at large. I mean, because, you know, he went after some Hollywood girls as far as Hollywood, Mexican Hollywood's concerned, and Latino Mexico. He had some nice starlets that he had on his arm and things like that. And, of course, I told you he was having sex when a referee went in to check on him to give him final instructions before a bout at the L.A. Forum. Now, that's what I was told. And who told me that? The referee. I kid you not. He said, I went in to check Chavez last night. I said, yeah, big deal. And that's what you got to do. It's your job. No, you don't get it. I said, well, Chavez wasn't ready. What do you mean Chavez was ready? Now he was in the shower with a girlfriend. I said, was the shower running? He said, no. So we were in a dry shower, unbeknownst to the referee before he came in to give the final instructions before the fight. Obviously, he had to come back. Now, I'm getting some texts in here, Pedro. You're dissing Mike Tyson and Roy Jones. They're in their 50s. They put on a good boxing exhibition. It was exciting for me. I'm glad, John, I'm glad it was exciting for you, okay? But, you know, if you look back at the history of boxing, I tried to pump I look back at the history of boxing. Old champions have always done exhibitions like this. Jack Tunney, I think Muhammad Ali done some exhibitions when he was champion. I don't remember him doing a whole lot of exhibitions after he retired. But some guys do. And some guys, you know, some guys have made a living on it. I mean, Jack Dempsey has made a living on it, no doubt about that. Scored millions of dollars going around the country doing exhibitions. But exhibitions are just that. They're exhibitions, except when I'm involved. Because every exhibition I was involved with, except for that one with the world 190-pound champion at the time, of course, that's when cruiserweights were back at 190 pounds back in 1984. That was Carlos De Leon when I went 4 rounds with him down in San Mateo. 4 rounds with Butch Gomez, 4 rounds with Carlos De Leon. That shows you what kind of shape I was back in the day as an amateur. I was coming off the decision loss to Vernon Webb. Vincent Webb in the 1984 Olympic Western Olympic Trials, of course, in Colorado Springs. Was coming off that. I was in real good shape, and man, that was a good night. Of course, De Leon winning a 12-round decision back when there were 12-round fights. Of course, 12-round fights becoming the happening part in the 1980s, but you know, he was a 12-round decision over Bash Ali. And Bash Ali is one of those colorful characters that had more mouth than anything else because Bash couldn't fight a lick. You talk about a guy with two left feet. I mean, holy cow. All you had to do was step over to the right on Bash. Every time he came at you, you took one step over and you threw right hands over his jab. It just was there. I mean, he was a cruiserweight. And yet, he was winning all these fights. And I kept seeing this guy's record. He's climbing in the ratings. And in the gym, he's a piece of, yeah, you know, nothing. Nothing. Absolutely nothing. I mean, I'm licking him. Other guys are beating him up. He's a punching bag. And yet he's ranked number one by the WBC. So anyway, we're getting to the great Bash Ali story. So they get him ranked number one at cruiserweight. Back, as I said, when it was 190 pounds, he's ranked number one by the IBF, the WBC, and the WBA, the number one contender across the board. So they take a fight. They take a fight. Sonny Morrison was his manager at the time. They took a fight. Sonny Morrison, of course, guided me to two Golden Gloves. My first two Golden Glove championships, he was in the corner. But Sonny ends up taking this fight with the 1988 Henry Tillman. He took with Henry Tillman, of course, another Olympic gold medalist. So he takes this fight with Bash Ali for a lousy $8,000. He's ranked number one by the WBC, the IBF, and the WBA. He's going to fight, I think Holyfield was a champion then, so it was going to be some big-time money, no doubt about that. So they put him in a fight with Henry Tillman, and he gets knocked out in like the blink of an eye. And, of course, he never fought again. He was a fraud to begin with. But what I'm trying to tell you is, If there was a critical managerial mistake made by the boys here in San Francisco, that's why we never produced too many champions here. I mean, Andre Ward's from here, but he moved to Oakland and sort of built his boxing career in Oakland. He didn't build it in San Francisco. Nobody really builds their boxing career in San Francisco. I mean, it just ain't happening for a fight town. We had the oldest boxing gym in the history of the country before they shut it down in the 80s. Talk about Newman's Boxing Gym. I think it started in like 1907 or something like that. So it was the oldest boxing gym in the country. We had fights here that held 100,000 people out of the border at Sickles and Mission here in San Francisco. Sickles is right on the Daly City border. What they did was they built an arena out there outdoors, an outdoor arena where they would build stands and this kind of stuff, and people would come, 100,000 people would come and see fights. So San Francisco was a place where boxing was happening, but it didn't produce the champions, per se, that it should have. And I just don't know why. Until I look back at the gym, and Newman's gym in the day, and I see people like Benny Ford and, you know, Phil Rancatori and people like that, and the aforementioned Sonny Morrison. None of these guys were even remotely smart when it came to boxing. They weren't. So that's why San Francisco was such a miserable failure as far as producing champions. I mean, we had Ray Lunny III at one point in time, or Ray Lunny Jr. His father, I believe, was a former fighter and his trainer. He couldn't do too much. He failed when they put him in world-class fights. Of course, Eric the Prince Martin, he never developed anything past the jab. Andy Nance never got past the California Championship. Of course, he was ranked number one at one point in time by the IBF. Supposed to fight Terry Marsh. Both those guys never fought again. Of course, Nance claiming headaches or head injuries from a fight, of course, he had with Mitchell Julian. It was a war at the Circle Star Theater. Man, it did take its toll on both guys, no doubt about that. But locally, of course, we had, Mario Lesbrance, of course, the United States Amateur Champion from 1984. And, of course, he fought again in 1988. He stuck around too long for the Olympics. He stuck around for two Olympic Games. He tried to go for two Olympic Games. After they screwed him in 1984, Mario tried to go for it again in 1988. Took 4 years off his pro life. When he finally turned pro, he just didn't have it in my mind, of course. So Mario, an outstanding amateur, but not making it as a pro. And, of course, the son of God. God knows we had Andre Ward. And when I said that Andre Ward was going to win the Olympic gold medal, and everybody said to me, you're out of your mind. Gary Radnich had me on the radio. He was dogging me the whole nine yards. He said to me, you know, Pedro, man, you don't need to shill for the hometown guy. I mean, he's fighting a guy that's much bigger than him. He's moving up in weight, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And I said, he's going to win. And not only did he win, he won brilliantly. Of course, the 2004 Olympic gold medalist, the son of God, Mr. Andre Ward. May he, man. You know, and he's retired now. He looks like a retired fighter. More power to him. He doesn't look fatter like that. But he looks retired. He looks normal again. You know, not skinny. Bottom line is, great guy, no doubt about that. Married to his childhood sweetheart. They've got kids, man. No police record on Andre Ward. So while we haven't produced too many, we produced one great one. the great Andre Ward. From San Francisco, California, you're tuned to Ring Talk.
But it's something else to watch two men at the highest level battle, and one may be favored over the other, but you never know what's going to happen. And that's why boxing is the way it is.
Now, more of Ring Talk with Pedro Fernandez.
You think you won the fight?
Yeah, but I'm good with a draw.
Why?
Because I entertained the crowd. The crowd was happy with it.
He's going to pull it off again, folks. The con has just begun. If you bought that fight last night for $49.99, if you didn't steal it on the internet, shame on you, man. $49.99 for what? To watch two old guys spar? Come on, you watch it at the gym. At the end of the night, of course, Mike Tyson and Roy Jones made a lot of money, more power to them, but they want to go back to the well and try to do it again. I heard them say it about 10 times in the interview. Please, let's know how to have an act number two. The UFC was rocking and rolling last night, of course, from Las Vegas, Nevada, in the Apex Center. Anthony Smith in a substitute main event defeated Devin Clark. The original main event, I think, was going to be Devin Lewis and I can't remember who the heavyweight. Anyway, Derek Lewis, and Derek Lewis tested positive for COVID, of course, so they stopped that fight. They pulled that fight off the card, and the main event turned out to be Smith and Devin Clark. Of course, it was submission hold, a triangle choke in the very first round, 234 in. So I'm sort of cool on that. And the reason why I'm cool on that is they made this fight a five-round fight after it was announced it was a three-round fight. In other words, at the last minute, they said, Dana White with these guys said, you need to go five rounds. So I can see them preparing for a 15-round fight, but imagine that. They tell you the day before you're going to fight somebody, the fight's going from 15 minutes to 15 minutes to 25 minutes? From 15 minutes to 25 minutes in the blink of an eye? Overnight? How can you prepare for it overnight? You can't. That's why I'm glad this fight ended in the first round. At the end of the day, as I said, Dana's in my opinion, my favorite pimp. You are tuned to Ring Talk Live Worldwide, your inside look into the world of boxing and MMA. Coming up, hour number two of Ring Talk Live Worldwide. After the news, of course, I'll bring in UK's Kenny Rayford coming to us from the Tyson Fury training camp. We'll talk with Ernie Shavers, a former heavyweight contender. Of course, we'll have some Ali and Howard Cosell as well. Hour number two of Ring Talk Live Worldwide forthcoming after the news on Sports Byline, iHeartRadio, SiriusXM, Satellite Radio, Channel 211.